Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the very first day of October. October. Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
We should mention, because Steve's not here.
Right.
We don't have the cameras going in studio.
Right. And we don't have the YouTube up. We don't have any of that stuff going. It's just us.
Going barefoot.
The old days.
Yeah.
A return to the old days where we're just on the radio. But, of course, you can listen on the radio, and you can also listen on your phone, on your computer, to the Jazz 90.1 stream. It's all available to you. It's just a matter of how you get to it.
And we've always said, since day one, we've got faces for radio.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And today, and radio, remember, is theater of the mind. Ooh. You think about what visuals you're looking at. All right. And we don't want to know.
I don't want to unsee that.
Absolutely don't want to know. All right. Microsoft is now blocking the Windows 11 22H2 update from being offered on some systems with Intel Smart Sound Technology audio drivers, or SST, Smart Sound Technology. They've also put a safeguard hold in place because this known issue triggers blue screens of death on affected systems. Remember, you're Microsoft's beta tester. Intel
and Microsoft have found incompatibility issues with certain versions of drivers for Intel Smart Sound Technology on Intel 11th Gen Core processors and Windows 11, Microsoft said in a Windows Health Dashboard update. Windows 11 devices with the affected Intel SST driver might receive an error with a blue screen.
Oh, might receive it. It's not a big deal.
Play Russian roulette. You're feeling lucky today?
Exactly, punk. Intel SST is an integrated audio DSP or digital signal processor that enables the company's latest Core and Atom processors to handle audio, voice, and speech interactions without a performance hit. Microsoft recommends not to manually update affected systems to Windows 11 22H2 using the Media Creation Tool or the Update Now button until the problem is addressed and the safeguard is removed. The affected driver will be named Intel Smart Sound Technology Audio Controller under System Devices and Device Manager and have the file name intcaudiobus.sys and a file version of 10.29.0.5152. Or 10.30.0.5152, Microsoft explained. The same issue is behind a compatibility hold blocking customers from upgrading to Windows 11 21H2 since November of 2021. Yes, this thing has been around for about a year and Microsoft hasn't fixed it yet.
Uh-huh.
Microsoft added that some of the impacted Windows 11 customers might be able to work around this issue by checking if Intel has an updated driver for their systems. If you cannot find an updated driver that addresses this issue, you need to make contact with your device manufacturer or OEM, original equipment manufacturer, for more information. After updating the affected Intel SST audio driver, it can take up to 48 hours before you can install the Windows 11 22 update. The Windows 11 22H2 update is also causing a significant performance impact on systems with NVIDIA GPUs, with users reporting stuttering and massive lag while playing games due to substantial drops in CPU usage. NVIDIA has acknowledged this known issue and released a GeForce Experience beta version that addresses the performance issues. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 11 22H2 blocked due to blue screens on some Intel systems. And your choices are the update killed my computer, the update didn't affect me, I haven't had the update, I block all updates, Windows 11, and of course, other. So far, we've got 16 votes. 15 of them are for Windows 11, and one is for I haven't had the update. I would love it if you would all vote in the poll. And of course, if you have more to say, you can head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 1 Oct 22. Windows 11 22H2 blocked due to blue screens on some Intel systems. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One thing I got to say, on my three Windows machines, the best notice that I got from Microsoft is when these updates come up, and you go into, you know, doing the updates, and that there's a big signage on all three machines that says, sorry, Windows 11 will not work on your machine.
Congratulations.
I think, thank you. That's right. The nicest thing you've said to me yet.
Right. We've seen this over and over and over again. Microsoft is getting worse and worse at quality assurance, QA, that is to say, getting their machines ready for multiple systems. And I understand the problem. I do. There's 100 gazillion machines out there, and every single one is unique.
Yeah, different configurations, motherboards, video cards, yada, yada, yada. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
That's why for the last 2 years, Microsoft has been telling their investors they want to make Windows a system that you use from the cloud rather than on your machine so that they can control everything. Of course, the truth is they can't because you're still going to have a video card. You're still going to have different amounts of RAM.
But the other thing, too, though, is not everybody has internet access.
Right.
I mean, you know, you get some folks even here in Rochester. You go down into, say, the southern tier and people are still using dial-up.
Right.
Because, you know, sorry, cable company is not coming down to them.
That's right. And so that's a problem. You know, we talk a lot about Chromebooks on this show, and they are also web-based, cloud-based. But you can use them with no cloud access.
Mm-hmm.
And that's automatic.
Yep.
Right? So, and I've said this before, that there have been times when I've been doing things and you lose network access, but I can keep writing, and I don't even know we've lost access. And then when it comes back, everything I've written just flows right up to the cloud again.
Right,
we're done.
Automatically.
And so that's a thing that Microsoft needs to do. The problem is, and we were talking about this earlier, one of Microsoft's problem is legacy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's stuff that was written 35 years ago that people are still using, and Microsoft is still supporting. Apple has had the guts four times now, I think, in their existence to say, you know what?
We're cutting bait and leaving.
We're cutting bait. Everything you know is wrong. We're changing our complete architecture. If you've got an old machine, too bad. We're moving on to this new thing, and everything is different. If Microsoft had done that even once, somewhere along the line, and said we cannot any longer support these legacy systems, they would be much farther ahead. But the problem they have is that one of the things they're doing is trying to continue to support systems that are ancient. And that's a real problem that has no solution. At this point, it has no way. There's no way to deal with that securely first, because, you know, programs that were written 35 years ago just simply are not designed to be secure. And layering security on top of them never works well. That's one of the problems Microsoft has. their operating system was originally designed in an era where if you wanted to steal something somebody had, you had to sit down at their machine. There was no internet connectivity when Windows was created, even when NT was created. And remember, NT is still the core of Windows 11. The same file that was
the whole kernel
back then. And yes, they've updated it. They've made a few additions. But it is still basically the same kernel. And it was never designed for security. And that's part of their problem. Linux changes regularly. Apple just throws everything into the fire and starts all over. Chrome was designed with security in mind from the ground up. And Microsoft continues to lag behind mainly because of that legacy support that they're insistent on maintaining. And I get it. I get that, for example, ATMs still run on Windows 95. The armed forces of the United States still run on Windows 95. I absolutely get that. But they could maintain those separately and say to everybody else, you know what? Windows 12 is a whole new ball game. You're going to have to get new software. You do that half the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Apple's had the guts to say that, and Microsoft has not. You're going to have, we're putting out a brand new operating system. It looks the same, which is all people actually care about. But it's going to be much more secure underneath. It's going to run entirely differently. You're going to have to upgrade all your software. And, you know, we're done. We're done with the old, and it's in with the new. And that would make, to my way of thinking, that would make Microsoft much, much easier to keep secure in the future. And, you know, it's a pain point once, and then you're done, as opposed to every month is a pain point for somebody in the Microsoft world. And I just, it's kind of ludicrous. Now, on the other side of that, I have not updated my main Linux box because I'm a coward.
You're still running 20.04?
20.04, and there's 22.04.
Yeah, that's what I'm running.
Right. And I'm running it on this laptop. I'm running it on my Chrome, on my Raspberry Pis. I'm running it on my other laptop, but on my main desktop,
You haven't bitten the bullet yet.
What we're talking about here is every 2 years, Ubuntu comes out with an LTS version, long-term support. The long-term support versions are more stable, but they don't necessarily have the latest and greatest of everything.
Is it 2 or 4 years? I thought it was 4.
I think it's, well, yeah, they come out every 2 years, but they're
long-term for
long-term
4.
For 4.
Yeah. Okay.
So the latest one, 22.10.1, I think it is. Hold on.
Yeah, because I'm running 22.04.
Yeah, 22.
Jelly,
yeah, 22.04.1. Yeah,
Jammy Jelly.
Jammy Jelly. Yeah, something like that. 22.04.1. So the 22 is the year, 04 is the month. They have 04 and 10,
yep.
And the .1 means it's the first update of the 22.04 thing. So that is, and that's LTS, long term support. So that's on my laptop right now. I'm soaking in it. And it will last for, I think, you're right, 4 years, 4 or 5 years. Anyway, a lot. So I don't have to change. But it also means that you're not necessarily running the latest and greatest. And that's okay. It's stable.
Yeah, but here's the thing, which you're probably smarter that I'm learning. Because I did try out 20.04, and you know there was a lot of simple updates for programs and all that, but a couple it was I really don't need, if I'm gonna do this I'm gonna do it right, I wiped it and put 22.04 on. Saying that though, now some of the stuff that was working great with 20.04
right
hasn't quite caught up
right
to 22.04. It will. I mean, they're already working on it. Right. It's just a matter of time. It just doesn't happen overnight.
And really what it comes down to is how many non-repository programs are you running?
Packages, yeah, different packs.
What happens is a program like Linux comes with what's called a repository. And it's got, what, 100,000 programs in it? But it's not every program you need.
No.
You know, you might run, for example, the stuff that, Dave does is a lot of ham radio stuff. Most of that is not part of the package. You've got to load, not all of it, but you've got to load external programs.
Yes, there's
there
a number.
There are a couple that I use that are external programs. Anything that's in the repository where you can just say, install this, pink, and it goes, those are updated to work properly with the next version. But outside programs may not have caught up yet. So it's always good to wait a while. Now, it's been 6 months, so...
Well, like that money dance that I discovered, that's not part of the repository.
Right.
So you have to go to the money dance website, and then you go, okay, yeah, here it is, download it. It's a Debian file, so all I have to do is once it's downloaded, click on it, and it says, do you want to install it? Boom, it does it.
Right.
I just sit back and watch it, quick install, and then, boom, there's the icon, and...
Right.
Ready to go.
But when they put out a new version of Linux, everything in the repository is guaranteed to work.
Yep.
Things outside the repository have to be updated by the maintainer. And so, you know, the for example, this machine here, except for a few Python programs that I wrote and Chrome, everything I use is in the repository. So I could be using Chromium, which would be in the repository, but I'm using real Chrome, Google Chrome, and so that was outside. But that works fine. So, fine. That all works. However, on my desktop, there are a bunch of programs I use that are outside the repository, and I have not yet bothered to go check to see if every single one of them is ready for prime time. But, again, Linux works more like a Mac than like Windows. One thing with Linux, you can update. I get little updates 3-4 times a week, but they're little updates. Oh, this piece updated, that piece updated. Go ahead and install it. You do it in the background. You never have to stop doing what you're doing. When something like Chrome updates, the Chrome browser updates, then, yes, you have to shut down the Chrome browser in order for the update
restart,
to go
yeah.
in. Well, that, but you don't have to restart your machine.
No,
you
just
to shut down the Chrome browser.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, okay, I get that. I don't have a problem with that.
You do on a regular machine, too.
Right.
Because they're always saying, we got some updates. Do you mind if we redo it? And you click on it, and it's got to restart the browser.
Right. So that's understandable. Sometimes it can restart it in the background. For example, I got an update to... MySQL a while ago, during the installation, it said stopping MySQL, installing the update, restarting MySQL. Okay, so for those 8 seconds, I couldn't have used my database. Okay.
Oh, live with that.
Okay. So what Microsoft has done, and they're changing. They've said they're going to change. But in the past, we all know you pretty much for every update, you have to reboot your system because of the way things are intertwined and the kind of rickety structure that Microsoft has set up. Because, again, they're basing their structure on this legacy code that has not changed in so long. And they really... God bless them. I get it. They're trying to maintain continuity for the entire
so many different
Microsoft.
Variables,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and they're trying to maintain that continuity, and that's hard in and of itself. And then when you add 11 billion different peripherals, many of which don't update. Well, for example, okay.
Printers.
My father-in-law, God rest him, had a
HP?
No.
Oki?
No. It's Epson. Stop. It's a scanner, flatbed scanner for his slides. Slide scanner.
Okay. Yeah.
And you can put in a stack of slides and hit the button and off it goes. Well, guess what? They haven't made that slide scanner
in
10 years.
I would say decades.
And that was never updated, obviously, in the last 10 years of Microsoft updates.
Pushing it.
So this thing's just been sitting around. and I get it. I do. I absolutely do get it. But that happened from the other end. That's the scanner company
not
saying we're done with this device. Microsoft is still saying, hey, if you can get the driver to work, you can use it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make sure that that all works. Well, okay, but...
ain't always going
to
happen.
In order to do that, you're leaving some holes in your operating system that you really should close. And it's that rickety underlying structure that's causing all the issues in Windows. And if Microsoft just sat down and said, we're rewriting the entire operating system for, and they may be doing that today. Who knows, right? Particularly since, as we said, for the last 2 years, they've been telling their investors that they're going to run Windows in the cloud. And if by doing that, they just say, everything you used to do stops here, and this is the new way we're doing things. And, oh well. Right? Just basically, oh well.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do that, you will end up with a much better, much faster, because you're not running through a bunch of Band-Aids and kludges, a much more secure operating system. And frankly, I'm all for that. I absolutely think that's the right way to go. They just need to stop and say,
cut bait.
Everything you know is wrong. Here we go from here.
Yep.
Sort
of like Norton did. They were getting a bad reputation for so long that if you put Norton antivirus and security on your machine, it literally took over all the resources, and everybody was saying, oh, heck no. And they were driving, you know, going to other applications by the droves. And all of a sudden, Microsoft, Norton pulled back and said, oh, wait a minute. And they, from the ground up,
rebuilt everything.
It is slick, it is very low on resources. I mean, it's very powerful, but it takes up less processing time, and that's what the customer wanted,
right? And that takes guts,
mm-hmm. and money, time, and money.
And it takes a lot of money. Well, Microsoft has money; they're not hurting in any way, shape, or form, and they also have time.
Yeah,
and they also have enough programmers, or could hire more, to say, you know what, this whole building full of people. You're redoing Windows
from the ground up. Time is definitely against them if they don't do something.
That's right.
Because folks are slowly going away. You're seeing more and more folks go to Chromebooks, tablets. You know, hey, it serves their needs. It's doing everything they wanted it to do, and even going to Ubuntu. I mean, by the end of this year, I'm going to have three of my machines off of Windows. I'm finally, you know, my contract with QuickBooks is over as of the first of the year. It's fine. I'm going to Money Dance. I don't need it. And I'm running all the programs that I wanted to run before.
And I'm seeing a lot of people, you know, asking me, how do I put the new Google Chrome OS on this old laptop?
Yep.
Because they want to see, they just want to see something different, and that's fair. But equally importantly, Windows just isn't running nicely on those machines anymore. And part of it is because it's this rickety old framework. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and you can call us. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. The financial news publication Fast Company took the extraordinary step Tuesday night of shutting down its website after they said they'd been hacked, resulting in a pair of obscene push notifications containing racist language being sent to Apple News subscribers. A spokesrobot said that its content management system account was hacked on Tuesday evening. As a result, two obscene and racist push notifications were sent to our push notification is the kind of thing where you just get a notice on your phone. It's been pushed to you instead of you saying, what are my new notices? That's a pull. Okay. Our push notifications were sent to our followers in Apple News about a minute apart. The messages are vile and are not in line with the content and ethos of Fast Company. We are investigating the situation and have shut down fastcompany.com until the situation has been resolved. The statement also said the hack was apparently related to a hack of fastcompany.com that occurred on Sunday afternoon when similar language appeared on the site's homepage and other pages. We shut down the site that afternoon and restored it about 2 hours later. Fast Company regrets that such abhorrent language appeared on our platforms and in Apple News, and we apologize to anyone who saw it before it was taken down. People who attempted to access the website were greeted by a 404 page on Tuesday night indicating the website was taken entirely offline. Apple News also addressed the incident in a statement posted to its Twitter account. An incredibly offensive alert was sent by Fast Company, which has been hacked, the company said. Apple News has disabled their channel. It was not immediately clear who was responsible for the hack or how severe it was. Where do you get your news? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. That's one of the, you know, we're in a connected world now.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple, it was quick to explain they are not Fast Company. Although they showed the messages on their iPhones, they did not create the message. They were not hacked. They are not responsible.
They're just a service.
Right. Fast Company is a service they contracted with to provide news. Anybody who reads Apple News on their phone or wherever sees the stuff that Fast Company sends out.
Yeah.
Fair. I think they do financial news only, I think. Yeah. And they, in general, whenever you do something like that, you have to trust that the other company is secure. You know, I do a couple of services, a news service and a couple of other things where I aggregate other people's news and send it on. And mm-hmm. you know, that they know that that's what's happening. Everybody up and down the chain knows that's what's happening. But I have no control over what news they produce.
Yeah,
it's not my news.
It's out of your hands. Yeah.
I'm just aggregating it, pulling it from their sites, mm-hmm. putting it all together.
As a package, send it out.
So when I do that, I make sure the people who receive it understand I'm just the carrier.
You're just the messenger.
I'm the conduit. I'm the phone company. I'm not responsible for the guy breathing heavily in your ear. I'm just the carrier. And in this case, that's Apple. Apple is just carrying the service of financial, of Fast Company. It's always a delicate issue because, when something is, I'm certainly not even going to tell you what those messages were, but I will tell you they were insanely offensive to anybody, with an ounce of soul in them. So you know, Apple, on the one hand, vilifies the people who put out those messages, and well, they should. On the other hand, it are distancing themselves from that, and well, they should. You know, we don't know how Fast Company got hacked. Everybody's assumption is a weak password. And by the way, how are your passwords? Talk about that in a minute. But basically, it, you know, if you're going to run a service, you need to be sure that your service is secure. It's a real problem these days. There are, you know, one of the things that I, most of my websites that I put up, I write the code for. And because they're all bespoke websites, script kiddies can't get in.
Mm-hmm.
There's no script out there that says, oh, Nick Francesco has this one site, we should, and here's a way to get into it. But Soundbites is WordPress. And it is quite obviously WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be very, very careful.
Due diligence.
All the time. You know, we have a bunch of people that I block regularly. And by regularly, I mean daily. And you know, I've got it set up that for most people, they can't just post. They have to get okayed to post.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, they can post something offensive the second time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and our users are pretty hap, pretty understanding and pretty easygoing. So they know that if somebody posts something stupid or offensive, it's not us.
Right.
It's them.
Somebody snuck in and
right.
trying to be a jerk like they are.
Right. But there are lots of places where people don't really get that. They don't get that. It's on somebody's site, but that doesn't mean that that person posted it.
Right. And they want to blame that person, though.
Right, you know, right.
Oh, what are you allowing this for?
Well, it's need to be offensive. They need to be offended. It makes them feel important to be offended.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Oh, I'm offended, so you have to take care of it because I'm important. Okay.
Get a life.
Get a life.
Build a bridge. Get over it.
Exactly. But the point is that, yes, Fast Company got hacked, and because of that, a message was sent through Apple News Service to Apple News Service subscribers. But it wasn't Apple who got hacked, and it wasn't Apple who sent that message. And from what I'm seeing out on the forums, most Apple users get that. There's always somebody who needs to be offended, and I get that. Like I just said, they need to be offended because then it makes them feel important. Someone pays attention to them. I absolutely get that. And yes, the messages were incredibly offensive, and I get that too. But getting mad at Apple doesn't solve the problem. Getting mad at Fast Company kind of solves the problem because they were the ones who were hacked. But really, it's the person who sent the message.
It has no life.
Right, right.
Or very little.
And
life.
They're doing it, you know.
Attention seekers.
For attention. And I, you know, okay, fine. But yeah, anyway.
We find that all over the place. I mean, you know, there's always folks, a number of forums that I used to be in. I mean, well, that was one thing going back to rolling back a little bit about passwords and everything else. I am guilty of a weak password because way back when Facebook first came out, I set up my Facebook account. And it was set up with my old Enright PC, dnright at enrightpc.com. Well, that has been gone for a long time. I couldn't tell you if I had a gun put to my head what the password was.
It was long before you were using NPass.
Yeah. I don't think NPAS was even invented back then. So just this past year, my Facebook account got hacked. And they're saying, well, you're going to be shut down unless you can reset your password. And I don't know the password because it was an old account. Right. So I says, you know what? Go ahead. Shut it down. I don't care. I'm not seeing. I thought at first, oh, you know, I'm losing all these groups and people and everything else. And it's like, it's kind of nice right now.
You're right.
Because I set up a new account. And I got it. So I only see the groups that I want to see. And I don't see all that other garbage. Like you said, people posting opinions. And it's like, it's pretty sad that they got to be that bitter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, people, you know, lonely people need attention. It's sad, but there you have it. Anyway, passwords. You probably should worry about your passwords. One of the things is a program like NPass, a password manager. Now, I use NPass, but there's LastPass, 1Password. There's a bunch of them. And many of them have a great feature that, for example, NPass will tell me if a password is weak, if I have used that password before, if that password has been compromised, not just by me, but by anybody. You know, if I use 123456 as a password, wow, it's the same password on my luggage. You will also find that 100 million people have used 123456, and all the bad guys know that. So that is a compromised password. So a program like NPass will tell you about all of those and give you the opportunity to fix them, to change them. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Jason, all the way from Altoona, PA. Jason, how are things in Altoona?
Overcast and rainy.
I am sorry. You should come to Rochester where it's rainy and overcast. Completely different.
Fair enough. Going back to the earlier part of the show when you guys were talking about Windows and its legacy issues.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've done, I find that Windows XP and some of the applications there are the best for creativity because I've used them for so long. I don't have to think about different key commands and things like that. It's just their muscle memory. So I can work a lot faster in under Windows XP and the applications there. But to protect myself, I'm running Ubuntu as a hypervisor.
Nice.
And virtual machines on top of it. Everything that I do is virtualized on top of the Ubuntu hypervisor. So I've got a Windows 10 virtual machine. I've got a Windows XP virtual machine. I even have a Linux virtual machine that's my daily driver. And then,
cool.
But and the nice thing I like about it is the fact that, you know, if something does go wrong, you wipe the virtual machine and you should have a backup of that too. So you just copy that in and load it into the machine and boom, you're right back up and running. You could, for all intents and purposes, it would be like having to reinstall Windows, and it literally takes as long as it takes to duplicate over your backup onto the virtual machine and load it back in.
Yeah.
Now, to do that, I have the highest-end AMD processor, and right now, 64 gigs of RAM with another 64 on the way.
Right, there you go. Right, and when you're running a hypervisor as opposed to an operating system, which really is you're using Ubuntu as that, then you need that kind of you need a huge processor, you need a massive amount of RAM, and you need a bucket load of disk space.
Wait a minute, time out. If he's adding 64 more gig, I would highly advise him to send it up here for us to test for at least a year.
At least a year, absolutely. The whole machine. Send us the machine.
I think we should put it through its paces, and then that way we could tell them whether it's safe to do that.
That's perfectly fair.
I love the thinking. It's not going to happen, but I love the thinking.
You got to give me credit for trying.
All right, for everybody else, let me explain what Jason is doing here. Normally, you run an operating system on a computer. What Jason is doing is running Ubuntu, but he's not using it as his desktop. He's using it to run other virtual machines. So he's basically running a computer inside a computer. What that means is if and I used to do that when I was doing testing of new software, and particularly when I was doing testing of viruses and breakdown of viruses. You create a machine inside the machine, a virtual computer inside your computer, and you isolate it. They're generally isolated from each other so that if one of them gets a virus or screws up or has a problem,
crashes,
it doesn't affect anything else. And as Jason said, the first thing you do when you create a virtual machine is you back it up.
Yep.
And if there becomes a problem with it, then you just dump that image. It's just a file on your desk,
yeah,
and put the other one in, the new one in. Now, that also means you have to be really, really good with backups. And I'm sure Jason is, and I'm sure he's automated most of that. Or he doesn't save data.
Oh, no, I have backups. It's just manual.
Right. But you're still doing it, and that's the important part.
That's the key.
Right. And going towards that backup and the policy of 3-2-1, I have a lot of the stuff on the cloud, but I don't trust Google. I sure as heck don't trust Google because, like you guys always say, you know, what's the next product they're going to cancel?
Right.
So, you know, what I actually did is because spinning drives are so cheap these days, I have a hot swap drive in my tower.
Nice.
It synchronizes. Actually, I should say I have one spinning drive in the tower and a fully mirrored spinning drive in the hot swap bay.
Nice.
The hot swap bay gets swapped every week, and every week I take that drive to my work because it's far enough away that if there's ever something like my house burns down,
right,
I still the worst I'm going to lose is a week's worth of data as I swap those two drives.
Right.
Because one's sitting on the top shelf of my locker at work.
Right.
There you go.
And what Jason's talking about, a hot swap drive, is one where you can pull the drive out and put a new one in while the machine is running. It's magic. It's magic in the background, but it is a hot swap drive, and you can do that. And what Jason is saying is that he's got one machine, one drive, rather, that he puts all his backups on, and then he can pull that out of the machine. And anything that happens to the machine cannot affect that drive. And he goes a step further by swapping that between another identical drive at work so that one copy is always way off-site.
Yep, off-site.
And that's
protected.
That's excellent. That's a great way to do it. The issue with all of that, of course, is that much of that backup has to be done manually. But if you're conscientious and do it,
all you got to do. All you have to do is have one failure and lose everything.
Yep.
That will educate you enough to do backups.
You remember a few years ago on the forums about the guy who had the USB drive that died on him?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
That was me.
That was you.
Was it?
And that taught you the lesson.
Yeah, well, not only did it teach me the lesson, but it also taught me that there is somebody out there watching out for us when I was able to fully recover going from USB 2 to USB 3.
Yeah, nice.
Good.
Nice. Well, and that's the other thing. Like I said, when I was working at RIT, it always broke my heart. Some student would bring their thumb drive in and say, you know, my thesis is on here and I can't read it. Can you help me? Well, you know what? You could have bought another thumb drive for $5.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you? Why don't you have a separate backup? You should have one on your machine, one on the thumb drive, one on another thumb drive, and nowadays one in the cloud. You know, if you're talking about something as important as your thesis, you may not trust Google, but you get 15 gigs.
Yeah.
And as a fourth backup, so what if you don't trust Google?
Fair enough.
Right? And the same is, you've got Apple will give you 5 gig, and that's more than enough for a thesis. And Microsoft will give you 5 gig, and that's more than enough for a thesis. You could have 3 online backups as well as all your local backups. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, at that time, it was a 2-terabyte drive, and it was 80% full. And they were still expensive at that point.
Yeah.
But if you want to know more, like I said, the full story is on the forum if you want to look it up. But
yeah.
Wanted to let people know that there was a way to continue working their older software while still maintaining new technology and most importantly, the safety of the newest security defenses.
There you go. Right. Thanks, Jason. We appreciate that.
Have a good day, guys. I'll talk to you next time around.
Yes, you will. Have fun down there.
We try.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's absolutely right. Yeah, you absolutely need backups. And, you know, everybody says, oh, I'll get to it, oh, I'll get to it, oh, I'll get to it, and then they don't get to it. And, you know, we've seen the problems where people back up Shortcut, which is not the program or the data. I tell people all the time, you don't have to back up the programs. You're going to reinstall those anyway when you reinstall the operating system, but you need to back up the data, and you need to have multiple versions. I spent 25 years of my life as a systems administrator, so I'm a professional paranoid, and I know that you do not, and in fact cannot, have enough backups.
Mm-hmm.
So even now, I just set up another Raspberry Pi. I'm going to throw a terabyte hard drive on that and back up a whole bunch of stuff to that as well, just so I've got yet one more place.
Well, what I did is, since Google is so generous in giving you 15 gig, I have 4 different Google accounts.
Right.
There's 60 gig of free storage space. So not only do I put it at one place, I put it at all 4.
Why not?
It's for my banking stuff, and it's like, oh, heck yeah. So I got a little routine that sits there. It automatically backs up. It can do 2 different backups. So I got a little routine that then it will back throw it to the other 2
nice
IDs. And it's like, nice. Yep, that's the way I'm going to do it.
That's the way to do it. And you can encrypt those backups before you put them up there so that they're
safe. I don't worry about it.
And, you know, and for those of you, I know we got to get to the phones. For those of you who have photos, we talk about that all the time.
Yo.
If you're already paying for Amazon Prime, you have unlimited photo storage. Why aren't you using it? You're already paying for it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Tom, we can at least get your question in. What's up?
Yeah, it might take a while to answer. So yesterday, I don't know, something happened to my computer. I guess it crashed. Anyway, powered it back on again, and eventually it's rebooted. But now, maybe I didn't notice earlier, at the bottom right corner of the screen, the home screen that I have, it says test mode, and underneath that, Windows 10 Home, and underneath that, build 19041.vb, and then it gives a release number. Is that something that has always been there? I don't recall seeing it before.
And it says test mode?
Yes.
No, that is not normal. Mm-hmm. That sounds like when your machine crashed, bad things happened. And you're running Windows 10?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What that is, what that generally does is let you install and test drivers that have not been digitally signed by Microsoft. So what it sounds like is you've got a driver that is you installed separately, or some program you're running installed separately that is not does not have Microsoft's imprimatur, and that's what's causing this problem. Now, how long that's been there, I can't tell you.
I certainly did not intentionally create or install that enable that.
Right, right. Well, listen, we got to take a break. Stay on the line, and I will explain to you what you can do to deal with this when we get back.
Thanks.
Okay? All right. We are, that music tells us, the first hour of this show is done. We want to thank all of you who listened, but do not go away, because there's an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. We're going to have more Dave Enright, Too Much Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. sound bites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You, because it is solely with your support that we remain on the air. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the new known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have
Tom
on the line, and we're talking about from Brighton, New York, and we're talking about test mode. Are you still there, Tom?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. The first thing you need to do is to go into your settings and your drivers and find any that have that little caution triangle, the yellow caution triangle.
Yep.
And write those down and then see if there's an update, probably from the manufacturer. Because if Microsoft had an update for that driver, it would probably have been automatically installed. So check with the manufacturer to see if there's an updated driver for that and install it. Follow their instructions on how to install that. And then once all of those triangles go away, then reboot and the test mode will go away.
Okay, so the test mode just indicates that there's some caution about the driver, correct?
Yes, and that's everywhere from, well, this driver is great, but we haven't put our imprimatur on it, to we don't know if this driver is going to crap out any minute.
Or maybe it's just out of date.
Or it's just out of date or what? Yeah, whatever. It just says test mode, but there are a billion things behind that. Mm-hmm. So check to see that all of your drivers have updates and get the newest versions. And make sure those versions are designed for your version of Windows. That's the other part of the problem. You have, what'd you say, Windows 10 Home?
Yes, Home. Yeah. 10 Home.
So if you have Windows 10 Home and something installed a Windows 11 driver, that may not work perfectly.
Right.
So make sure you get the right version for your version of Windows.
Okay. I'll certainly follow that advice. Thank you.
Good luck, Tom.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Again, not really Microsoft's problem, but it is their issue, right?
Right. Well, if he's got like a name brand computer, he can go to that particular website, you know, whether it's a Dell
or HP
HP, you know, and they've got, matter of fact, Dell just introduced this new service where you can do driver update and you put it on there and it'll send you notices when there's an update for a particular driver for your version of Windows on that particular machine.
Right. And many of them work in the way that you go to them and you put in your serial number.
Yep.
And they say, "Oh yeah, when we sold you this machine, now if you've changed something, all bets are off."
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't changed the machine they sold you, they will give you that list of drivers that is the current updated list. I know HP does it, I know Dell does it, I think Lenovo does it. But I'm not certain of that.
Yeah, what Nick's referring to is, say you bought a Dell computer, a desktop computer, and threw in, you know, it came with onboard video. And all of a sudden you throw in your own video card, then Dell's not going to be responsible for updating that driver for that video card.
Right.
You've got to go to that manufacturer, say if it's NVIDIA or whatever, and go to, or GeForce, and go to that particular website and get the driver at that one. If you've changed or added anything different than from what you ordered in the machine.
Right. It's important to understand where their responsibility ends and yours begins. But once you know that, you can manage pretty nicely. Now, Tom, I believe, has a separate issue. He says he didn't install any drivers, but it is quite possible that some program he installed,
a Windows generic driver,
installed its own driver for some reason. I hate it when programs do that. It makes me even crazier than I am. But sometimes that happens. There are a couple of ways that Linux gets around that. They now have two new formats. Well, they've got several new formats, but the two I'm talking about are Flatpak and Snap. And in both of those, it essentially creates a virtual machine. So when you install that program, it puts everything it needs. And then when it runs it using the stuff it installed and only connecting to your machine for video and getting stuff mm-hmm. from the keyboard and like that. So it's an interesting new way to do things. You need a fast machine in order to make that happen quickly, but it does happen.
That's one thing I'm still trying to get used to with Ubuntu. You know, I'm brought up on Windows, is getting used to, like, say if I install a program, and, you know, if you open up, say, the file system and trying to find out where that file is installed.
Right.
And moving stuff around in that. And I finally found, oh, you got to do the unhide the dot folders.
Right.
Because that's where everything is put. Like under Windows, you could usually go, you know, you open up your file manager and you see the C drive and you go down to, say, programs 386. You go in there and you'll see all your programs that you installed. So if you've got, say, certain things, keystrokes or anything else, or documents that are defaulting and saving in that folder, you can usually scroll on down and find out where it is.
Right.
Well, on Ubuntu, it says where it put it. But if you go over and look on the left-hand side, you don't see it because you've got to unhide it.
Well, just like Windows has hidden folders,
yeah,
those are folders you're not supposed to screw around with. So you know, unhiding them, you better know what you're doing, because that's where you know. Oh, I don't know what that System 86 was, so I deleted it.
No, what I was trying to do is I was installing one program, and you know, it comes with a bunch of macros, and the default ones. Well, I've spent hours redoing the way I wanted it. So I wanted to replace it. So I had to scroll down and find out where it put that file.
Right, right, right.
So I could, you know, unhide it, put it there, replace it, and then rehide it, and I was good to go. But getting used to that scenario is...
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing about Linux that I very much like. In Windows, so many things are in the registry. And every programmer can touch the registry and screw it up. In Linux and in Mac OS, everybody gets their own little file, whether it's in .config, which is a hidden file in your directory, or in /etc, which is the global configuration area. They can put their little file, and if they screw something up or you screw something up using... you know, changing that file, you don't touch anything else. It's only that one file. And I like that very, very much. I much prefer that to a registry that is so important and that every single person who writes code touches.
And that's why we do not, have never, nor will we ever tell folks how to go into the registry and play around with it, or even make a slightest change, because it doesn't take much to mess up just one line, and then the whole registry, not just that one little area that you were going into. If you go in there and make a change, it affects the whole registry. It's all or none, folks. It's not just that one little line. It's no. It gets totally confused and doesn't know squat, and it messes everything up.
And the other thing, of course, we'll get to the phones in a second. And the other thing, of course, is when you add something to the registry grows.
Oh, big time.
When you remove something from the registry, it does not shrink. Every program, and this is Microsoft's rule, every program just sets that registry entry as invalid. But the entry is still there. So if you put in 50 things in that entry, those 50 things are still there.
That's why we recommend using Revo Uninstaller, because that not only gets rid of things in the actual file system, it safely goes into the registry and will remove it because it knows what to do and do safely.
Well, and that's, and we get, you know, calls all the time. My machine takes forever to boot up. Why is that? Well, you've got a 2 gig registry.
Mm-hmm. Minimum.
And so when you load the machine, first, it's got to load 2 gigs. And if you're on a spinning drive, that's slow.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it's got to parse through that and find the 6 working entries inside the 5,000 invalid entries.
Especially if you've installed and uninstalled the program, say 4 or 5 times because it wasn't working right.
Right. Or you just are playing with stuff. I tried this. I didn't like it. I tried this. I didn't like it. So Revo Uninstaller takes all that stuff out and can significantly
increase and improve.
Right. The speed that, with which your machine boots. All right. To the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. What's up, Pat?
Well, I was listening to your show and I decided to go back to your, I don't know whether you mentioned AskNick or I just thought about it. So I went to my email and I decided to look up AskNick, and I have 2 messages. One that I made a subscription September 3rd of this year, and the second is that I will get another payment September 3rd, 2023. I'm wondering, do you send out any other emails besides that? Because I don't have anything else.
No, I just want your money. I take your money and I'm done.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm
no. Here's the deal. You should be getting Ask Nick subscriptions. For everybody else, Ask Nick is my weekly newsletter. The column I used to have in the newspaper is done, but I still keep sending out. You know, people send me questions. I answer them in my newsletter. It comes out every Sunday afternoon. Except a couple of times during COVID when I was not well. But generally speaking, it comes out every Sunday afternoon. It's $25 a year. And Pat, if you're not getting it, send me an email telling me that, because I'm on the air right now, but I will look up what I...
Anything more than tell me the email address to use.
Well, let me give you 2. One is nick at asknick.com.
Okay, I'm typing this in, so just give me a moment, please.
Right.
Nick at asknick.com. Nick.com.
Right. And the other is asknick at gmail.com. That way, if you send it to both, it'll definitely come through.
Okay. And I have 1 more contribution to your program. Ask
well, let me finish this. If there's an issue with your subscription, I will correct that. Sometimes what I find is that people have mistyped their email address.
Okay.
And so it, whatever the problem is, I will solve it. So, I'm sorry, go ahead. What's your next?
This was just to kind of, obviously you can't remember some conversation, but this was one that when you talked about it, I could not get through and you said you would fix it that day. And guess what? You are not the center of my universe. I'm sorry. I should have warned you. Trigger warning. You're not the center of my universe. I forgot to check. But then when I was listening to the show, I thought, gee, I wonder what's going on here. And yeah. So anyway, back to your thing. You'll appreciate this. You know the Dummies series?
Oh, yeah.
Everything for Dummies. I have to admit I thought that would never work because nobody wanted to admit to being a dummy.
Right.
I don't know if you ever saw this particular book, Windows Registry for Dummies.
Oh, nice! No, that should never be a book.
Mm-mm.
Well, this is probably 10 years ago, so we're a little late to tell them to stop. But I thought about that today. Okay, good. I got everything I needed. Thank you very much. And I will send an email to both of those.
Thank you, and thank you for letting me know. I will make sure that that gets fixed.
Maybe email is like the regular mail. You send it out Sunday. It might take 2 weeks to get it.
It's an email thing, so it's not snail mail.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, take care.
Yep, you too. Yeah, I do send out. It's the same column. It's the same thing that my column used to be. People send in questions. I answer them in the newspaper. That column has been stopped, so now it's just me sending them out as a newsletter, and I charge $25 a year, and you can renew, and I send it out every week.
Do they still even print a newspaper?
Yes. Yes, they do.
It's got to be so small and thin, probably blow away.
Yeah, I do not know. but we also, now, as many of you know, on Sunday nights at 9 p.m., we have the Soundbites Lounge. If you go to soundbites.org/lounge, you can join us there every Sunday night, and we talk about computer stuff and whatever else you want to talk about. Similarly, I have a lounge for Ask Nick subscribers only. So anybody who is a subscriber who wishes to ask a question outside of sending it in and getting it answered in the newsletter can join us for that one. But the open free one, if you are a listener of Soundbites, I guess even if you're not, you can join us every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Just go to soundbites.org/lounge. And from 9 to 10, that link will be there and available for you to click on. If it's before 9 p.m. or after 10 p.m., you will not see the link because there's no point in having you sit in the waiting room for an entire week waiting to be let into next Sunday's thing. So we only show the link between 9 and 10. But that's all courtesy of Mastermind Lounge, which is very nice of them, and we have that set up. So if you want to be part of that, and it works like any video chat service. You can ask questions either by voice or by typing them into the chat. You can turn on your camera or not turn on your camera. We don't insist on any of that nonsense. So that's your choice. We know there are a lot of people who don't want to be on camera. That's fine. We know people who love to be on camera. That's fine. So, you know, if you want to join us Sunday nights at 9 p.m., again, if you go to soundbites.org/lounge, all lowercase, you'll get the information you need. So that's pretty cool. All right. And you can give us a call while I read the news, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. On Wednesday, Amazon held its fall hardware event where it announced a bunch of new gadgets. The event comes ahead of a busy holiday shopping season and ahead of the company's second Prime Day, known as the Prime Early Access Sale, which will take place on October 11th and 12th. So just a little less than 2 weeks from now. Here are the highlights of what got introduced. The Kindle Scribe, a new Kindle you can write on. 10.2-inch display and a pen that allows you to take notes, make to-do lists, write directly on the pages of the book you're reading, which normally would be blasphemy, but this is electronic, so it's a little different. You can use Scribe to mark up PDFs and other documents. Last weeks and weeks without a charge. You can pre-order today. They'll ship in time for the holidays, and the Scribe is priced at $340. The Halo Rise Sleep Tracker. It's a no-contact sleep tracker. It has environmental sensing with a smart alarm, wake-up light, as well as machine learning sensor tech to accurately detect sleep patterns. It's a little creepy, but okay. The device comes with 6 months of Halo membership and will ship later this year. The Halo Rise works with Alexa. It doesn't require users to press a button, or charge a battery, and it helps determine all of your sleep phases from REM to light and deep sleep and provide users with a sleep score. There are four new Echo devices, the Echo Dot with clock, the Echo Dot Kids, the Echo Studio, and the Echo Audio, which is five devices, which are, Echo Auto. So it's Echo on your car. That's not really a device. It's, never mind. Mm. The Echo Dot and Echo Dot with clock deliver up to 2 times the base of previous generations, according to Amazon. It has a new temperature sensor, so it can do things like automatically turn your smart fan on when it gets too warm inside. The new Echo Dot Kids now comes in owl and dragon designs. I know some adults who would like that.
Yeah.
The device comes with a 1-year subscription to Amazon Kids Plus, offering kid content, including books, games, videos, songs, and more. The Echo Studio boasts better sound quality and frequency range extension. Echo Auto has a new design of flexible mounting options, so you can use Alexa to listen to music, make calls, and get hands-free roadside assistance. The Rings, they also introduced the Ring Spotlight Cam Pro, the Spotlight Cam Pro Solar, and the Spotlight Cam Plus, which is not Pro, apparently. Spotlight Cam Pro has 3D motion detection, which can send motion alerts to your phone. The Plus now has multiple power options, including solar, battery, wired, and plug-in. The new Fire TV Cube, a cross between a streaming media player and an Echo speaker. It can be controlled by Alexa and includes support for 4K Ultra HD, Dolby Vision, HDR, and Dolby Atmos audio. It now includes an HDMI input port, Wi-Fi 6E support, and super resolution upscaling. It costs $140. A new Fire TV remote and a new Fire TV set with much all the same similar features round out the offering. So are you all in with Amazon devices? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You know, everybody wants you fully in their ecosystem. And I hate this thing. Okay, hold on. There we go. Everybody wants you fully in their ecosystem, and it's a little hard sometimes to hop between them. But if you're all about Amazon, you've got a whole bunch of new products coming. But you all right there?
Yeah, no, my headphone hit.
Yeah, clearly it did. All right, our next caller is Walt from Greece, New York. What's up, Walt?
Hi there, Nick and Dave. I have a hardware question with a laptop.
Yeah.
Okay. I have an older laptop that I used to play around with, test other Linux operating
sure.
systems, just
mm-hmm.
put it in the CD or whatever. Well, I was fooling around with the keyboard and knocked a little stick, the stick mouse that's in the middle of the keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Pencil, eraser mouse.
Yeah, put that thing in. Well, I put it back in. I think I may have pressed it too hard because now the cursor just flies right down to the bottom left corner. I use another outside optical mouse even when I boot up, but no matter what, whether it's a live CD or whatever, it just jumps right down there and I have no control over it. Sounds like I screwed up that mouse.
Yep.
Is there anything I can do about it?
Shut it off.
Yeah.
Shut it off and just use, now does yours have the finger pad down at the bottom?
Yes, it does.
Does that work okay?
No.
Yeah, it shorted the whole thing. I would just go to a wireless mouse.
Or a wired mouse.
I do have a wired mouse and I can't control
same.
It.
Either or, yeah.
You could try replacing the driver, but it is unlikely that will do anything.
Yeah, 10-1 odds when he pushed too hard, he wound up, because there's like, on that mouse, there's three pins on that little thing.
Yeah.
That if you push too hard, you might have snapped one and caused a cold socket.
Okay. Yeah, cause I can't even do with the outside external optical mouse.
Yeah.
It's already, when I put in the CD, it just drops right to that lower
mm-hmm.
left corner. And that's
you broke that little connector in there because it's, it's pretty durable. But, if you press too hard, you can, put a little pressure to the side. It can snap one of those little tiny pins, even though they're pretty strong. But over time, they even wear out.
Yeah.
Just like, the pads, and they used to have little space bars on the either side of them. Those were notorious for breaking because people would hit them so hard that, for the left click and the right click, They tap them so hard that they break those.
Okay, but it sounds like I can't do anything now because, as I say, I have an outside external mouse going through the USB, and I can't control it. I can't do anything.
Well, what you need to do is to turn off the internal mouse.
Yeah, turn.
And you can usually do that
in the BIOS.
With the keyboard or in the BIOS.
Right. I looked in the BIOS. There is nothing for the mouse.
Okay, then you can do it in the settings, and you can do it with the keyboard using the Windows key and the arrow keys
to get that. One other thing, though, is sometimes they have along the top the FN keys.
Yeah.
They're for different functions, like turning the volume up and turning the internet on and off. See if there's one for the mouse pad to, usually if you hit FN and say 3 or 4, depending on the symbol, and turn it off.
Okay. I will try all those then. Great. Thank you.
Yep. On this laptop, actually, there's my F9 key. If I hold the function key down and hit that, apparently it turns off the mouse.
There's a way to turn that mouse and mouse pad off, usually on most of them.
Yep.
Marvelous. All right, great. Thank you. I was looking for that. You're always the source of the information I need. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Thanks. Oh, we have an issue. Hold on. We have an issue. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you, because it is with your generous support we remain solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You know, we talked about backing up photos because you can't replace those.
Yeah. Those are always the hardest. I mean, because documents you can always recreate.
Right.
It might be not exactly word for word from the original, but the essence of it can be there. As far as the photos and the countless times over the years that I was in business, I felt so bad for so many folks because they didn't back them up, and they were photos that they wanted so bad, but there wasn't getting them back, and you can't recreate those moments.
You can't recreate the moments, and all you need to do is back them up. Now, there is an issue saying all that. Many Google Photo users report seeing artifacts in old backed up images last week. The issue seems to affect photos uploaded over 5 years ago, adding lines, dots, deep cracks, and what look like water stains not present on the original uploads. A support thread highlighting the issue includes various examples showcasing the extent of damage seen on older images, with users reporting the artifacts on Google Photos across all platforms. User reports suggest that the artifacts persist even after downloading the images, either directly from Google Photos or using Google Takeout, which is rather concerning. However, some say that clearing the cache resolves the issue. Interestingly, A few users say that opening the affected photos in the Google Photos image editor removes the artifacts. This suggests that the original uploads might not have the artifacts after all. Google issued the following statement regarding this issue. We're aware of the issue and are rolling out a fix. The original photos are not impacted. The company has not provided a definitive timeline for the rollout, but it's already started. So if your old photos were affected, and we're talking about 5 years ago photos, which you probably don't look at too often, but if your old photos are affected, be patient. The fix will get to you shortly. If your old photos are fine, either you weren't affected or it's already been fixed. You'll never know. So are you backing up your photos? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Ed did from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, hi. You guys were just talking about a mouse. I was curious what you thought if you have a Chromebook, you know, with a touch screen, et cetera.
Yeah.
And they're built-in mouse. I mean, it just takes forever to use. What do you think about spending $30 for a Bluetooth wireless mouse? You think that's a good deal? Or
Look, if you're unhappy, many people do not like the trackpads. And I absolutely get that. So you can easily, with a Chromebook, use a wired or wireless mouse. Some of the wireless mice will work directly with the Bluetooth that's built into a Chromebook. Mostly the newer ones, honestly. Mostly the newer ones. But generally speaking, whether it's you put a little dongle in and run the mouse or you run the mouse directly, it's real easy to do and it works perfectly.
Yeah.
So you don't have a problem. I you know, if you're unhappy with the trackpad, go for it.
Yeah, the touch screen, I got this Lenovo about 6 months ago. After you get used to the touch screen, it's almost automatic, even if you're sitting on some other, you know, your brain reaches for the screen and they look at you like you're nuts, you know, because it doesn't. But it's the only problem is sometimes if you can't blow the screen up, you know, the little parts where you hit the wrong button or whatever. But that's kind of rare. It's not like on your phone, which it's real small.
Right.
But I didn't know that they want $30 for it at Best Buy, and I thought, well, you know, I don't know whether to. I suppose if you get used to it, I didn't know if it was going to be as responsive as one would be on a regular, say, laptop or a desktop computer.
Yes, it will be. And as with any regular laptop or desktop, you can also go into the settings and change the sensitivity.
I see.
So you can, you can set it, and you can do that with the trackpad as well. So you can set it to the sensitivity you like.
Check Walmart, too. I mean, they've got mice. Right. I mean, a mouse is a mouse. And you might be able to get it.
Of course, sorry.
Get a little bit cheaper.
That's a good idea. I didn't know you could set the trackpad. Where you just go into settings in the Chromebook? Does that pop up?
Yeah.
As an option?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the settings, you know, you go, you hit the lower right corner there, and then you select the little gear, which is your settings.
Right. Yeah.
And then in settings, just search for mouse.
Cool. I didn't know I had that. Yeah, that might, because sometimes you scratch it forever, and by that time you're going to touch it two times, and bang, you're there. You know?
right.
The only problem is it's not, you know, you have to watch it, because when the way the thing is, when mine is structured, you don't dare, you know, you have to touch it fairly easily, like you're a brain surgeon, rather than just poke it like you would on a laptop or a desktop, you know.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I didn't think about the competition. That's a good point. Okay. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Have fun. Also, I don't know, because I don't have a Chromebook with a touchscreen. I mean, I have one. I've never looked. You may be able to change the sensitivity on the touchscreen as well. Again, I don't know. I don't have one, so handy to check.
Yeah.
I will, of course, check that when I get home. But right now, I cannot check that. But it may well be that you can also change the sensitivity on the touchscreen. So check that out. All right. To the phones, our next caller is Tom from Brighton again.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay.
So I did what you suggested. I looked at the device manager. All of my device drivers are not showing any indication of, you know, yellow or any kind of flagging that they might be out of date or not good. Every single one is just, you know, completely unmarked. It's just fine.
But did your machine do a Windows update?
You know, it does updates all the time with Windows. That's the problem with it.
Yeah, and that's what might have crashed it or put it in the test mode, is because it could have substituted one of your drivers that was working fine with a Windows default one.
Yeah, well, how would I know that?
What I would do is... Let's see. I would first start with at least the video memory and maybe the network card, if you got a network card in it, and the sound card. Check those manufacturers for drivers. What type of computer is it?
It's an Asus. It's an older machine with
it goes back to like 2010, I think it is. But it works just fine. I updated the memory. It's got 24 gigs of memory in it and SSD, so it's lightning fast. It's amazing.
Yeah. But like I say, I would check and compare the driver dates.
So just update as many drivers as I can is what you're saying.
Yeah, check and see what's in there and what you can get off the web.
Okay.
Because, like I say, Microsoft might have, substituted one of their generic drivers because they're always into your system. They know better what they're doing than supposedly you do.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And, you're just one of their guinea pigs to try stuff out.
The other thing you can do, it is possible that something you installed turned on test mode.
Okay.
So there is a way to turn that off. It is a little complex, but I can. I'm posting a link in. I just did publish. Come on, you can do it. Yeah. I know you can. You did it. I just published a link to an article on how to handle that.
The only thing about doing that is if I'm suppressing the fact that it is in test mode, or then maybe I'm hiding something else that's going on.
Well, I was about to say that. Yes, that is certainly a possibility. Mm-hmm. But if it is simply that something was updated, a driver was updated, but the update didn't register that driver.
Yeah.
So you're not getting a bad driver because you don't have those yellow triangles.
Correct. Yeah.
So you've got all good drivers. What you don't have is the signing mode. So you can turn off signing mode. I just put a link to how to turn off signing mode in the watermark in Windows 10 on the desktop. But that's the only other alternative right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I just wish we had actual control of our own machines.
Well, you do. You just don't have it in Windows.
Yeah. All right, I'll do what you suggest.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah. I don't know what to say at this point. That's simply the truth. You have. We've been talking about this all day. Every programmer gets their hands on your machine. And sometimes they don't have due diligence. So you have that issue of somebody didn't properly sign something in your machine, or it was signed but they didn't turn off test mode when they put it in, or who knows. All right, back to the phones, and our next caller, it looks like return day for everybody. We've got Jason from Altoona, PA back again. What's up, Jason?
Hey, just a thought for the gentleman with the test mode activated.
Yeah.
We've been in an increasing solar flare, solar activity sunspot cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that the test cycle was literally due to a driver crash that was created by a bit flip in memory.
Absolutely possible. That's something we should talk about in general. The solar flares send out radiation. They are on an 11-year cycle, and we're nearing the top of that cycle now.
We're starting year two of an 11-year cycle.
Right. And so it's going up at this point.
Oh, yeah. And matter of fact, so far, the solar flares and flux readings, they had low expectations that it was going. It's not going to be that great. Like, what was it? 20 years ago.
Yeah.
This one is proving everybody wrong. The flare counts are way up, and it's causing phone blackouts and communication blackouts. They're warning people at times the GPS systems can all of a sudden go totally bonkers.
And your machine. And they can, and the radiation going through your computer can in fact flip bits in memory or on a drive. And so we may be seeing unexplained problems over the next 11 years, 9 years anyway.
Yeah, next 9 years.
that we, you know, that simply what happened? Well, it was a radiation spike. So you're right, Jason. It is very possible that we're going to, and that's an incredibly unsatisfactory thing. Right, because you can't fix that. You don't even know it happened. And
Mother Nature has control of that.
Right.
So my suggestion would honestly be just let it ride, because eventually the system is going to say, "Well, there's been no more crashes. We're okay."
Yeah, at some point, yeah. Right? Or you can turn, like I said, you can turn that off, and then later on turn it back on and see if it comes back.
I was going to say, why are you a ham operator, Jason?
No, I just watched a video on YouTube from Kyle about how they discovered the radiation bit flips.
It's
pretty bad.
No, I was going to say, because they did a whole article on it that is affecting communications and everything else. So watch some of the data that you're getting. Doctors were concerned because they were quite often nowadays, they can email and send electronically results. But with these flare-ups, it's messing some data up, and they're asking for verification just to make sure that the numbers they got and everything else is what they're seeing.
Right. And, we've been very lucky. We have not been hit directly by a solar flare.
Yep.
If we are, it could take down all communications if it's strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember, what is an antenna? It is a thing that sucks in radio waves. What is an antenna? It's just a long piece of wire. What's strung on every highway in America? Wire. Long pieces of wire.
And you've got all those satellites out there, too.
Right.
I mean, and they have antennas on them. Right. And they're literally sending signals back down to Earth. And there are thousands of them up there.
Yep.
So, depending on where they are and where they're bouncing and pointing to, they're just radiating it out even that much more.
Yep. For someone like me who has absolutely no sense of direction, I get lost in my own driveway. That's just true. I use UPS, GPS constantly. Constantly. And the thought that it could be sending me somewhere weird bothers me.
It has a... Believe it or not, because I do drive for a living, it has messed up our systems a couple of times where somebody was going, they thought, to one place, and the GPS got messed up and had them go to the other side of town.
Yeah.
Because they were just following the directions, and then once it hiccuped, it came back, and it's like, I'm on the wrong side of town. I'm in Spencerport, and I need to be in Webster.
Yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right, Jason. This is going to get worse and worse as time goes on.
No, you got... For some. For me, I'm enjoying it.
You're enjoying it.
Only from the standpoint that normally on some of the channels and that, I could yell longer than I could get out. And now it's not uncommon. You can turn the radio on, and all of a sudden you hear somebody coming in from Japan, and they sound like they're sitting right here in this room.
Sure, because you got great skip. I get that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
For the average human being, not the weirdos like you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The average human being, be aware that there are... That's another reason to have multiple backups.
Yeah.
Because, you back something up once, and that can be a problem. If you don't back it up, and a bit gets flipped and data go bad. Again, you can lose pictures. If a picture can't be read because one of the header bits is bad.
You've lost it forever.
You've lost that picture. Having multiple backups means that the likelihood that all of them will go bad is really, really slim. So that's where you need those backups.
And there's another vote for Linux, because those open source programs tend to open things that Microsoft says, I'm not even going to try.
There you go. You got it. You're absolutely right.
Take care, guys.
Thanks. Thanks, Jason. We appreciate that. Good point. Again, let me remind you, there are a lot of you out there who are paying for Amazon Prime so you can get, the shipping free and the movies and TV shows and stuff that Amazon Prime comes with. Well, guess what? Amazon Prime also comes with free unlimited photo storage. You download the Amazon Photos app to your phone, and every time you take a picture, it uploads it there. You can also
from your phone, right?
From your phone. You can also upload from your computer.
Now, can you do that automatically, too, from your computer?
I don't know that.
I was going to say, because I've been trying to.
Yeah.
As, I know it does it from the camera. That's, you know, my wife's phone. That's no problem. But right. She uses a camera. And I was trying to see if I could get that to, you know, take all the hundreds of photos that she has and put it up there. Because, like you say, it's just another storage spot.
You ought to be able to write code because you ought to be able to mount it as a drive. I haven't played with that, but it theoretically that should be possible. Like you can load Google Drive.
Yeah, the Google Drive. I've done that.
Right. That's, and you should be able to do that with Amazon. If anybody knows how to do that.
Yeah, because like you say, the Google Drive, you just go download the app, and it puts it on your desktop, and it's there as an icon. It also puts Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets on your thing and presentation. On your desktop, and a link to the Google Drive, and it's 15 gig of free storage. And you can also Google Photos. That's got all of mine up there. I've got thousands.
I've got 20,000 photos.
I got easily that and just my woodworking stuff.
Right. So I've got 20,000 photos on Google. I've also got 20,000 photos on the same 20,000 photos on Amazon Photo. And all of that storage is free. Well because I have on Google, I have the Pixel phone. And so that's one of the perks of having bought a Pixel phone. But Amazon, as long as you're paying that $99 a year, $120 a year, whatever it is now, you get that. And, you know, those are only two of my many, 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 many backups. Because I don't want to lose. I've got photos of my grandparents, my wife's grandparents, family members who have passed. Why would I want to risk losing those? It's ridiculous. So being able to take all those photos and back them up to Google and back them up to Amazon Photos, in addition to all my other backups, is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it means that I worry a lot less about a catastrophic failure in my home or in one of my computers or whatever. And like I said, if you're already paying for Amazon Prime for the movies and television and stuff, you should be doing this. You should absolutely be doing this. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
The Wagga, New York.
There you go.
So,
what's up?
Well, you have Google Drive, and probably you are in my favorite storage provider, pCloud.
Right, I haven't even talked about that, right.
There's our clone in Linux that will allow you to sync files between various cloud storage providers and your computer. They also have a feature where you can mount it like an NFS or SMB share.
Right.
So if I write something into my mounted pCloud drive, it goes, it just automatically writes it up to the cloud.
What program was that?
Up there that's up in-
Our clone.
Our clone.
Our clone? Okay.
As in remote clone.
Yep. I'll have to look at that.
Yeah. It's another good program. Right. So if you're a Linux user, you've got all these features available to you. I don't know if it's available. That's a good question.
Because I was using NSYNC.
Right. That's another one.
That's not too bad. It is a commercial product, but yeah. I tried that once when they had a free trial offer, and it works fairly well with Google Drive anyway.
Yeah, that's what I set it up. I've got four Google accounts. I figure that's 60 gig of free storage that I can put stuff up to.
And it's at ourclone.org. And if you go to ourclone.org/downloads, you'll see it's available for Windows, both 64 and 32-bit Intel AMD, also for 64-bit ARM. So those of you using Raspberry Pis, 64-bit only, it'll work. Mac OS for Intel and ARM. I don't know that it works for M1 chips. Every version of Linux, both .deb and .rpm. FreeBSD, NetBSD, OpenBSD, Plan 9, believe it or not, and Solaris even has a version. So, you can install it pretty much on any one of those systems. And it'll back up to your cloud storage systems for you. I did not know it was available for Windows. Thank you.
That's cool.
It's a lot like rsync, but made for cloud.
Okay, yeah. No,
right.
I'll check it out.
rsync is a program that automatically backs up what you haven't backed up yet. And rsync will even go into a text file and only back up the changed bit. So it's very fast. But if you set once you set it up, you know, if I've got 50 pictures in a directory and I rsync that directory, all 50 go up. But then I add two more and I rsync it again, only those two new ones go up. So the first time you do an rsync, it might take forever. Right? But you know, the next time, it's only going to update the new stuff. So that's pretty cool. Thanks so much. That's a great find. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Have fun. This is what I love about this show. Everybody else does the work for us. I mean, explains new things that we love to hear. All right. That's it. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I'm Nick Francesco, and I want to thank every single one of you who called in and who voted in the poll. The rest of you need to vote, but for everybody who voted in the poll. And yes, we're coming up on a pledge drive, and I hope that you are able to find it in your wallets and in your hearts to join or increase your membership to help keep this show on the air, because it's you people who've kept us on the air for all these decades. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just 166 hours.